welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it.
My guest today is Srinath Ananthiraman, who co-founded Cleosoft in 1997 and serves as the company's CEO. He has over 40 years of software engineering and management experience in the EDA industry. Welcome to the podcast, Srinath.
Thank you, Dan. It's a pleasure.
First, tell us a bit about your background. How did you get into EDA?
Well, I came to Washington University in St. Louis back in 1980 to do my master's in electrical engineering. I think it was that same year where this Mead and Conway VLSI book had published, and there was a lot of excitement. All of us bought that book, you know, we read it with a lot of interest. And EDA at that time was a very nascent field. My professor had an interest in EDA, and the fact that it was a combination of both software and the electrical engineering background, that really appealed to me. And for my master's thesis, I actually worked on I guess it was both an algorithm as well as some programs to automatically generate programmable logic array layouts based on parameters you set. You know, you can say optimize for speed or area, and it would generate this layout and would actually even print it out on a color printer that we had. And that was a lot of fun. So I said, well, I think this looks like an interesting area. So I started looking for EDA startups. And I think there were just a handful of them at that time. And I saw an ad for a company called Silver Disco. I don't know if you've heard of them. They were a charter member of DAC. They were one of the early EDA companies. And I joined them. And since then, I have stayed in EDA, mostly in small companies.
Yeah, of course, I remember Silver Disco. You know, my first DAC was after college in 1984. And I worked for a semiconductor company, and I met all these EDA companies. So, and Silver Lisco is one of them for sure. So 25 years is a major milestone for companies, especially in EDA. What would you say is a strong point to your longevity?
I don't know if there's any particular one thing, but I think if I had to pick, you know, a particular idea, it's the fact that the culture and the people of the company, I think that's what sustained it for so long. Maybe you have to go back several decades. I took this Asian philosophy course back in college, and we covered a philosophy called Karma Yoga. And effectively what that says is, you know, you're devoted to work, you do your work to the best of your abilities without focusing on the rewards. And even at that time, it seemed to appeal to me. It said like, okay, if I don't focus on the rewards and I get one, and it's great. And if I don't get the reward, I'm also less bothered by it. So somehow I think that philosophy has you know, been built into the DNA of the company itself. So we have not focused so much on growth. We think of growth as a reward that you get for doing a good job. So we focus on building a good product, supporting our users well. So over the time, you know, we've had several competitions, big and small. They have come and gone. But we have stayed true to our mission. We have tried to build the best products we can, deliver the best support we can. So as a result of that, I mean, I was just going through it a few days back, and of the first 10 employees that we hired, 9 of them are still with Cleosoft. I think that's quite a remarkable achievement, and it's something that I'd say I'm the most happy about. And so even after 25 years, I'm still just as enthusiastic about going to work, and largely because it's a pleasure to work with my colleagues.
Yeah, I can actually attest to that. You know, out of the 25 years, we've worked together for 11 years. Cleosoft was one of our first sponsors for SemiWiki. You know, I had this idea for a website. I approached you and you embraced it as well as Atrenta and Mentor and TSMC. You were my first four customers. And it's been a pleasure working with you. And yeah, I work with the same people at Cleosoft over the last 11 years. And your customers tell me the same. So I can attest to your longevity and certainly your company culture. But let me ask you this. So many things have happened over the past 25 years in terms of technology and chip design. Can you elaborate what was happening 25 years ago and why you decided to start ClioSoft?
Sure. I left ViewLogic back in 1994. ViewLogic had acquired Vantage, which was a startup that I was working at. And that, you know, as acquisitions go, they're always a little, rocky. And so some of us left and we started a company called Proxy Modeling, which we were doing consulting work for, essentially providing EDA consulting for IC design companies. So from my world, which was a software, you know, we had used, complex configuration management systems way back, you know, as a software engineer, I'd used all these sophisticated tools. But when we went in to do this consulting work, we found that even digital designers were basically working with RTL text files. Even they had not adopted configuration management. So we helped actually roll out configuration methodologies at Cirrus Logic right here in Fremont and Intel and several sites, including Chandler. And that kind of became the inspiration for building our SOS product. So instead of calling it configuration management, we were calling it design data management, which was too big and too long. And so we shortened it to design management. And that's the same thing that Cadence had been using, that terminology. And I guess it's a little more appealing to designers. And so that's the term we used, and SOS got launched. It was still a very missionary sale. I mean, the normal reaction when we went to any customer was, we've been working fine with our design management, so, you know, why do we need it now? And sometimes it would take like a bad tape out to get a call back. I think the biggest thing that, you know, changed this was the fact that design teams got bigger and they got globally spread out. And so that really helped accelerate the need for design management. You could no longer just walk into some colleague's office and, you know, talk to them. You needed more tools and methodology, and the teams had to work more efficiently. They were always in tight schedules and, you know, you couldn't have delays. And so initially, SOS was focused mostly on digital teams. But I think the bigger market we found was that in the analog and custom world. Analog designers, they were not editing text files, so they didn't have, you know, open source systems that they could use. They were working on libraries and cells and editing, you know, using graphical editors to edit schematics or layouts. So essentially, they were like an abstraction removed from the physical files. And usually, these tools produced a collection of binary files. And so this was not something the end user really knew about. So luckily for us, Cadence had, the Virtuoso team at Cadence, said they had already realized the importance of revision control and design management. And they had created their own design management system. I believe it was called Team Design Manager. While that particular product got mothballed, the infrastructure they had set up to do that, you know, that was still there. And so they opened up an API for third-party vendors like us. And then we were able to build all our, you know, design management features, revision control directly into the Virtuoso flow. And I think that was a game changer. That really helped us, you know, get into the analog custom flows, and it helped those teams really embrace design management. One interesting example that I often quote is one of our early customers was RF Micro Devices. And now I guess they're called Corvo. And they were presenting a paper about using SOS in their flow at Cadence CDN Live. And one of the layout managers came over to our booth and told me that when they were trying to select design management, he was like absolutely opposed to it. I don't want to deal with this. It's just another step. And then he said, well, I was glad I was overruled, because after a year or so, I totally realized the benefits of using that. And so I think that's what's happened in the industry as well. As people have, come to realize the benefits of it, it's just become standard practice now.
Right. You know, I think you're probably one of the largest vendors. I mean, you were a pioneer in the market. I remember seeing one of your customer slides, you know, the customer logo slides, and it was just massive. I mean, can you brag a little bit and tell me how many customers you have?
Sure. We have, I think, well over 400 customers now. You know, we have some of the largest semiconductor companies. as well as tons of startups and universities and research organizations using it. So yes, you're right. We're easily the market leaders in this area.
Yeah, well deserved. Where is ClioSoft headed in the next few years?
Sure. So SOS Design Management was focused very much on team collaboration. We are trying to make design teams more effective. Now it's standard practice, you know, when a customer licenses Cadence Virtuoso or Synopsys Custom Compiler, they also license SOS at the same time. But we've seen that designs have moved up another level. You know, now, you know, using lots of IP blocks, reusing existing IP blocks from your previous designs, or oftentimes, you know, just third-party IP blocks that have been purchased. Management has always looked at IP reuse as a positive thing from a very high level. But in reality, I don't think it's the norm in many companies. IP reuse is still largely ad hoc. You find IPs by word of mouth or just going through some shared drive and looking for the right IP. And typically reuse is, because of this, it's, you know, limited to design groups of the same design center, at least, you know, so it's not spread across the entire enterprise. Making IP reuse real really requires investment upfront. You know, you need to have tools, you need to have methodology, training, and on top of it, anytime you're designing an IP for reuse, it means there's an overhead associated with it. And that means that, you know, the design team that's working on it, you know, really doesn't want to pay that price. You know, just as we all hate to pay taxes, even though we want good roads and bridges. So we saw this as an opportunity. We wanted to take collaboration from the team level up to the enterprise level. And companies now, of course, there have been so many acquisitions, they're geographically dispersed. There are different business units that don't know about each other. And so we see that there's a lot of duplication work. You know, you're reinventing the same wheel, perhaps even paying for the same third-party IP, you know, multiple times. One business unit buys it, and another business unit buys it again. So we saw this problem as something that really needed to be addressed, and theoretically we could get a lot of productivity gains by taking collaboration across the different business units. So we introduced on a product called Hub. And this helps customers really leverage and reuse IP across the enterprise. You know, you could be in one business unit, still be able to find and reuse an IP that was designed in a completely different unit, in a different business unit, probably in a different part of the globe. And the idea, basically, what we're trying to do with this is to democratize the publishing of IPs. So anyone in the enterprise, any engineer can say, I want to publish an IP. So essentially think of it as a in-house Wikipedia of IPs. Anyone can contribute, but at the same time, there are workflows that you can set up. You can make sure that everything gets reviewed and therefore the quality and of the whatever is published is already been reviewed before. And so it's also not a static catalog. Now, each IP is linked to a issue tracking system. Each of them has its own discussion forum. It maintains full hierarchical traceability. Traceability, of course, is really important, especially for automotive and aerospace industries. And so over time, what we think this is going to do is create a knowledge base that acts as kind of an organizational memory. You're maintaining not just the IPs, but you're also capturing some of the expertise of all the engineers. So even if someone's left the company, if they've retired, whatever, some of their expertise has been captured in the system and others can find it easily. So we think this has real value. And the ability to find the IP and to reuse it across, you know, different design centers, I think this can really lead to big productivity gains. Of course, we're still in the evangelizing phase of this, but I think there's, once we have critical mass, I think we see that the acceptance and productivity gains will be orders of magnitude more. And we're already seeing good engagement from larger enterprises. I mean, this really works well for mid to large size companies. And so we're seeing definitely engagement in the larger enterprises right now.
Yeah, well, it's a good market. If you look at IP, the IP market is growing so fast, and it's become so important in designs from, you know, every company, including the systems companies who are doing their own chips now. So I see a bright future for Hub, that's for sure.
Yes.
But does the ClioSoft SOS and the Hub products work together, or are they standalone tools? How do customers use these?
Well, actually both. SOS has been selling standalone for many years now. We have sold Hub to certain companies that use some other design management systems. So they both work standalone, but they of course work very well together. And so we have of course gone to our existing customer base, and we've seen a lot of engagement there. And essentially what happens is that SOS is used, as I mentioned, for design teams to work together. So they create their IPs, they do their designs, and once they've reached a milestone, they'll publish it into Hub. And so now, using Hub, anyone in the organization, wherever they are, they can find this IP and reuse it, add it to their own projects, and perhaps they make some changes, they create their own variants, they can publish their variant into the system. And so the IP ecosystem really can grow over time. Of course, it requires, you know, some fertilization and pruning and, you know, tending to, just like your garden that you're talking about before. But once you do that, I think it's a very useful resource. And since we have integrated all of this directly into the EDA flows, it really makes it easy for an engineer not just to consume the IP, but to be able to publish as well. So we're really, you know, democratizing IP publishing, and we think that over time, this will be a very valuable tool, which, of course, will work very well with SOS or any other design management system that the company may be using.
Yeah, I agree completely. So how was your DAC experience this year?
Well, DAC was surprisingly much better than we thought. I mean, of course, December was kind of very sparse, so we were expecting something similar. We didn't get a lot of people from Asia, but I think we still had very good crowds. Our demo stations were always busy. We had a great party celebrating our 25th year. It was also well attended. So overall, I think it was a very successful DAC for us.
Yeah, I agree. I was in your booth quite a bit, and it was full. I think it was nice for people to be across from you because you attracted a huge crowd. And you always have something interesting going on in your booth, and you're a big DAC sponsor, which I really appreciate because I think it's a very important conference for our industry. And yeah, I was at your party. It was very well done. Great food.
Thank you.
So next year, you'll be at DAC again?
Of course. We're there every year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think next year will be even more attended. I think I saw the numbers. They said about 5,000 people this year. I remember when it used to be 10,000, but maybe we'll get there next year. But it's really appreciated the effort you put into DAC, and it's very well done.
Thank you very much.
Okay, well, we'll talk to you again. This has been great. Thank you for your time, Srinath, and thank everybody for tuning in.
Thanks a lot, Dan. That was a pleasure.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.